L. Grimace mugs. Hello Kitty keychains. Teeny beanies. For a limited time, your favorite McDonald's collectibles, filled with memories and magic, are now on collectible cups. Get one of six when you order a collector's meal at McDonald's with your choice of 10-piece McNuggets or a Big Mac. Come get your cup while you still can. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
At participating McDonald's for a limited time while supplies last.
Make this new school year an opportunity for your kids to learn important life skills with Greenlight. Greenlight is a debit card and money app for families where kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely while parents keep an eye on kids' money habits. Greenlight also helps families get into their fall routine with a chores feature that lets parents assign chores and pay kids' allowance when they check them off. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod. Greenlight.com/pod.
Hello, survivalists. This is The Crux, True Survival Stories. I'm your host, Casey McIntosh, joined by Julie Henningsen, per usual. How are you doing today, Julie?
Happy to be here, Casey. I got a great story to share with you, and I'm excited to tell you about it.
Cannot wait to hear about it.
So this is another one that, as I was researching it and reading it, I realized, oh man, why haven't I heard this before? This is an incredible survival story that just hit. The survival instinct and resourcefulness and the role that it plays in survival. This is the story of John Vitellet and his 16-day ordeal in the Pacific Northwest in September 1976. So let me tell you a little bit about John. He was born in Michigan. He was one of six brothers. So he spent a lot of time outdoors growing up. He was a Green Beret in the Army in his younger years. And during that experience, he was trained in advanced survival and trained as a medic. So he had a lot of background in medicine and survival and resourcefulness and all these things that ended up coming into play in this incredible story. He was also an experienced outdoorsman. He loved to spend time outside. And at this point in his life, in the mid-70s, he was living in Oregon, Portland, Oregon. And he took a trip up to Mount Rainier to do some hiking. He was by himself. Did some hiking there, and then was headed home. He had talked to his sister from Mount Rainier, so she knew where he was and knew kind of when he was expected home. And on the way home, somewhat spontaneously, he decided to do kind of a little exploration of Mount Hood, which is near Portland. But he hadn't told anybody that this was his plan. It was somewhat spontaneous.
This is when all of the bad things happen. It's when you're like, I'm just going to do this one more thing. For example, last Friday, my kids were at the skate park with my husband, and my husband was like, it's time to go. And my oldest son said, give me 5 more minutes. And then within that time frame, he managed to probably break his wrist and mash in his face. So there you go.
Oh, no. That sounds awful. I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay. But whenever you get that inkling of like, maybe we should do this one more thing, maybe it's time to go home.
Well, that's why they say never, when you're skiing, never call your last run of the day until you've finished the run. And then you decide that what we just did was our last run.
Because
it's Murphy's Law. If you say at the top of the hill, let's make this our last run, bad things are going to happen.
Right. That superstition. It's hard to shake superstition.
Well, and not only just superstition, but at least in the recreational ski world, that is the time of the day when people get the most hurt and the most accidents occur just because you're tired and worn out and
right,
don't have as many reserves. So this is September 11th, 1976. He's driving on this mountain road towards Mount Hood, and he came upon kind of a hairpin curve that sort of caught him off guard a little bit, maybe going faster than he should. It was tight. So he veered his vehicle a little bit onto the shoulder of the road, making that turn, but didn't drive off the road. The problem was the shoulder of the road completely gave way beneath him, and he tumbled in his vehicle, plummeted, actually, we'll say, 150 feet down this hillside, a steep ravine, where he sort of came to a stop again, in his vehicle at the bottom of the ravine, very steep hillside, just down from the road.
I have a couple questions for you. Was he belted in, number one? And number two, what did you say he was driving?
Okay, great questions. He was not wearing a seatbelt, which contributed to what I'll get to next about, like, when everything settled out and he was, you know, came to a standstill, how he found himself. Oh, the vehicle he was driving was a Mercury wagon.
Ooh, fancy.
Which I imagine, yeah, some kind of a 1970s station wagon. Sounds very cool. I'd be driving it today if I could get my hands on one.
What color do you think that was? Like orange, burnt orange?
It might have had wood paneling, actually.
Ooh.
It's probably like bright blue with wood paneling.
Sounds awfully sexy.
It sure does. Such a shame for a vehicle like that to be 150 feet down.
Right.
But because he wasn't wearing a seatbelt, he was tossed around a little bit in the vehicle as he tumbled down the steep ravine. And when everything came to a stop, he was kind of trapped in this position, which he described as a sprinter's stance, sort of facing the back window. So kind of flipped over, facing the back. And what was trapping him in that position was that his left foot was pinned to the dashboard of the vehicle by a tree root that had pierced through the windshield, shattered the windshield, come through, and kind of holding his foot against the dashboard.
That is awful.
Yes, it was horrible, and it constricted blood flow and terribly painful. He described the feeling in those first few initial hours and even days of this as having the weight of the entire car felt like it was kind of on his left foot.
So was the car in an upright position when it came to a stop?
I picture it was in an upright position. Yes. And actually, I have some forensic evidence that that might be the case, which I'll get to in a minute.
Ooh.
It wasn't specifically said in the research that I read. So he kind of divided his ordeal into sort of three different parts. And the first part, which maybe lasted 3 or 4 days, pinned to the inside of his car, 150 feet down in a steep ravine, was the part where he just figured, I'm going to get rescued. I'm so close to the road. Somebody's going to see me. Somebody's going to find me. I'm going to get rescued. And it's reasonable for him to think that. He talked about how he could hear vehicles driving on the road. He could even hear what he later found out were utility vehicles that had come to repair the shoulder of the road from where it had collapsed underneath him. He heard rescue vehicles, all kinds of service vehicles. So he just sort of figured, all right, I just need to wait this out. Somebody's going to find me.
Can I just say, what person came to repair that road and was too idiotic to look downhill?
Who knows if they were out, like, actually repairing it? It might have been, like, a recon thing, and who knows? But nonetheless, this distance and just kind of the landscape, it was too far for him to yell from where he was for anyone up above to hear him.
What about the horn?
He did try.
The car horn.
The horn didn't work. Good question. Yeah, the horn did not work. And I'm not sure if it didn't work because of the wreck or if it didn't work beforehand.
Well, let's hope that it didn't work because of the wreck, because if he hadn't fixed it and he knew it was broken, that would be a horrible thing to live with. Oh, my goodness.
Well, yes, true. And from what I've read about John, I would be surprised if he was driving a car with a horn that didn't work, because he sounded like a pretty on top of it guy.
Right.
In a lot of ways. And this story supports that theory. So initially, he's waiting. And on about the 5th day of this ordeal, he noticed swelling in his lymph nodes on his neck. And he noticed swelling in his face and his eyes. And his eyes started getting so swollen that they were swelling shut. He was having a hard time, like, looking around and seeing, you know, he would look back and check on his foot and he couldn't see his foot anymore. And he couldn't figure out why the swelling was occurring, but it was obviously a very worrisome sign. And in retrospect, what was happening was he later found out that he had actually punctured a lung in the car accident. Just a small puncture, just a slow growing, you know, collapsed lung or pneumothorax, as we would call it. And one of the really weird kind of physiologic things that happens when somebody punctures a lung and then combines that with yelling and creating a lot of pressure on the chest wall, a lot of back pressure, is that you can get this thing called subcutaneous emphysema, Casey, you remember learning about this.
Yeah.
It's where air kind of internally escapes the lung and just creeps its way up into your skin and interstitial tissues, tissues where air does not belong. One place that sometimes we'll see it in somebody who's up.
Want to teach your kids financial literacy, but not sure where to start? Greenlight can help. With Greenlight, parents can keep an eye on kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens use a card of their own to build money confidence. As a parent, you can send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and more. It's a convenient way to run your household, customized to your family's needs, and the easy way to raise financially smart kids. Get started with Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/pod.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Starbucks iced apple crisp oat milk shaken espresso. Made with blonde espresso, creamy oat milk, and spiced apple flavors. It's an icy crisp sip you can enjoy all autumn long. Order ahead on the Starbucks app.
Bright, is it right above their collarbone? In that little soft spot above the collarbone, they'll be kind of like a snap, crackle, pop, little bubbles under the skin there that you can feel. And it feels unusual and not normal. So that's what was happening, was this air was moving into his tissue. And that's why I think he must have been upright, because it moves up, you know, it rises.
What's interesting is the fact that it went all the way into his facial tissues. I've seen this post-surgically in some post-op pelvic patients who have that in their belly and up into their chest. And when you push on it, it literally feels like you're popping bubble wrap. And you can hear it and feel it. It's such a weird experience. And it's painful for some people.
Yeah. 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 That is interesting. I've not heard of it being in somebody's face and eyelids. But that's what, after the fact, was determined was at play with this swelling. So during this initial phase as well, he was getting extremely thirsty, as you would. And he was very near a creek. And so at first, again, he's just waiting, thinking, okay, well, soon as someone gets me, I'll go to the creek and get some water. But time was passing by, extreme thirst. So here's where John, using his resourcefulness, his mechanically inclined nature, he worked for a medical equipment company. He had been a dialysis nurse. He just had a mind for mechanics and coming up with devices and things like that. So he started rooting around the destroyed vehicle, everything that was within his reach. And he pulled out all the wire he could find that had kind of come loose in the crash. He had a tennis racket in the vehicle and he removed all the strings from the tennis racket. He pulled out the cord from his sleeping bag. So he's grabbing as much of cord and wire and strings as he could. And then he put it all together and made kind of like a fishing pole type device that had a rod and then some string dangling off the end of it. And then he took a t-shirt that he could reach and balled it up, tied it to the end of the string. And then he started kind of like a fly fisher, just putting this rod out repeatedly, trying to get the t-shirt to land in the stream.
So the stream was really close then.
Yeah, the stream was really close, just out of reach. So close, yet so far away. So he had to do this many times per day. He kind of mastered it and figured it out. He could get the t-shirt in the water. Then he'd pull it back in the vehicle. And then he'd wring the t-shirt out and drink the drops that he could get out of a t-shirt. And then he would do it again. So that just became his job, is just staying hydrated and doing that routine over and over. And the quote unquote fishing rod and line fell apart many times, and he would repair it and come up with different ways to modify it and keep that system going.
So you're saying he was in a sprinter's type position this entire time? He's facing the back of the vehicle in a sprinter position. Okay, that makes sense, because you have one leg behind you and you're in a sprinting position, right?
Right.
Ready for the gun to go off. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And that's how he described it. Yeah.
How uncomfortable would that be? Can you imagine trying to sleep in that position with one leg pinned like that?
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable. Yes. Well, the good news is, after a while without blood flow, he was really feeling no pain down there. I mean, he kind of knew that his foot was probably going to be, you know, unsalvageable at that point. The pain lessened due to lack of blood flow. Fortunately, it wasn't too cold at night. It was kind of in the 40s, so it wasn't comfortable by any stretch of the imagination, but he wasn't dealing with these middle of the night extreme cold temperatures.
And luckily, it wasn't the summertime, because the same thing would have been, like, heat could have been a problem if it had happened in August or July, right? So.
Right. Yeah. September is the perfect month for a incident like this.
Right. Get stuck in your car in September.
Yeah. Especially in Oregon. Okay. So now he's realizing he might not get rescued. He's found a way to stay hydrated. And then he goes into the next phase of his mindset, which is, if I'm going to get out of here, it's going to be because I get myself out of here. So he's looking around, he's brainstorming, he's taking inventory of everything that's within his reach, and he comes up with a plan. He had tried every way he could think of to try and get his foot free from this tree root that was pinning it down, and just it wasn't going to budge. Nothing was working. So he came to the conclusion that he had to somehow kind of destroy or sever or cut the tree root itself to get his foot out from under it. So one of the next ideas he had was he grabbed all of the mirrors that he could from the vehicle, the side mirrors, a rear view mirror, and he tied them to his makeshift fishing rod. And during sunlight hours during the day, he would kind of feed them out of the vehicle and move them around and try and catch the sun and try and see if he could get somebody's attention up on the road using a signal mirror approach. And he spent a lot of time. He spent days doing that, hoping that that would work, but it didn't. And he kind of abandoned that idea after several days.
Well, the good thing that he had going for him was that he had a couple things to occupy his time, even though I'm sure that he was uncomfortable and experiencing a lot of physical distress. At least he had something to sort of occupy his mind a little bit. Like, between that and retrieving water, which, how much water are you getting from a t-shirt? Like a quarter cup,
right,
at the very most?
Oh, yeah. It's like a full-time job to drink. And he wasn't ever quenching his thirst. He was just keeping it at bay.
Right.
One thing super interesting that I felt like was insightful about his personality is during this time, he talked about how every morning he would use some of the water from the t-shirt to wash his face. He had a comb within reach. He would comb his hair every morning. He would wind his watch, which actually makes sense because it's important to track time. He came up with a system in the vehicle for tracking the number of days, so he knew kind of how long he'd been down there. He would write notes to his girlfriend, who later became his wife. He even was able to reach an air mattress where he took the valve off and used it as a catheter type situation, and he would pee into the mattress so that there wasn't urine all over the scene. Some really pretty thoughtful approaches to managing, you know, small issues. And just the idea that he's combing his hair just tells you he's got the survivor mentality. Like, it didn't sound like he was ready to give up or thinking that this was going to go anyway, but it's positive.
Well, and also he was in the military, you said, right? And there's something you said about routine. And
yes, routine.
Mm-hmm. Which probably
is comforting.
Yeah. It's reassuring because those are probably the things he was doing every day in his normal day-to-day life. And so that may have given him some semblance of normal, everyday routine.
So eventually he realized if he was going to make it out of this, it's going to be because he saved himself. And he had to get his foot unstuck from under this tree root. And even though he'd tried every way he could think of to dislodge his foot, nothing was working. So he got the idea of focusing more on the root, the tree root, than his foot. And he had there had been a tire iron that kind of had been just out of his reach for most of this time. So he was able to really put his mind to it, inch closer and closer, and eventually he could grab this tire iron. So now he had a tire iron, and his idea, and he kind of tried to whack at the root with the tire iron, but it wasn't working. It wasn't going anywhere. It didn't have enough kind of strength just from his arm to do much. So then he took his fishing rod that he had been using with the t-shirt to get the water, and he tied a small suitcase to the end of the cord, and he put the rod out the window with the suitcase hanging off the edge. And it took him hours and hours of moving that subtly and delicately and trying And eventually he was able to get a rock from the hillside to roll into the suitcase.
What?
And then somehow he was able to pull the suitcase with the rock in it back into his vehicle.
Okay, MacGyver.
Yeah, so MacGyver.
Did he use the mirror from the car to figure out where the rock was in order to scoop the rock into the suitcase?
Probably. Wow. Was there duct tape involved? I don't know. Probably. But man, this is just like a lesson in ingenuity, I think. Just when you think like there's nothing you can do, there sometimes is.
Yeah. He had some, as Dr. Seuss would say, a skillful skill.
He had a skillful skill on this. So the rock, I think, was like softball size, maybe baseball size. And he used it as a hammer. So he had the rock in one hand, the tire iron in the other. And he just started pounding on the tire iron. And the tire iron was on the tree root, trying to just like bust it apart, trying to chip through it. And after the first couple of whacks, he realized, whoa, this seems like it's going to work. This is chipping away at it. So he just kept at it, for hours, maybe 3, 4, 5 hours. But he knew as soon as he saw the system at work, he knew he was going to survive. Like that was the thing that kept him going. And he needed something to keep him going because as the blood flow kind of started to return to his foot, every single one of those hits with the rock just was absolutely excruciating.
He terrible.
Started to regain some sensation in that foot that had been basically tourniqueted for days, over a week at this point, over 2 weeks. So it was the 14th day of his ordeal when he came up with the plan to use the rock and the tire iron. And then on the 16th day, he was able to pull his left foot free. And he was just so happy. He couldn't believe it. So he was able to wedge his way out of the vehicle and he went straight for the stream and just drank and drank and drank because he was so thirsty.
Can you imagine what it would be like to have your knee in your chest for 16 days? I don't even think that I could straighten my leg after that. You would just be,
yes.
You know, like your hip flexor would be so tight.
Right. Like every muscle would be so
tight. Oh, my gosh.
It's unclear like how much mobility he had outside of the left foot, but not much.
Yeah. I mean, maybe after he...
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off Duration products and SuperDeck stains from August 23rd through the 26th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Hear that? Pumpkin. That's fall calling. And the pumpkin spice latte is back at Starbucks. From that first sweater to late autumn weather, it's all a fall in just one sip. Order ahead on the Starbucks app.
Back to school means food changes. Early breakfast, school lunches, after school snacks, and let's not even talk about dinner. Ollie's here to help you cover all the wellness bases, from making sure your kids get their daily vitamins with Kids Multis or balancing your gut health with Ollie Probiotics. We're here to help you do wellness on your terms. Find us at a Walmart or Target near you or at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com.
Ollie!
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Sat in the stream for a few minutes and drank a couple gallons of water, he could regain his composure.
Well, and just the idea that euphoria of, I'm free, I'm going to live. I mean, that would make you be feeling no pain, I'm guessing, at least for a short period of time.
Yeah, the amount of adrenaline you must feel, even in the moment that you were describing when he realized he was going to get out, that is unbelievable.
Yeah, so reassuring. So after he drank his fill, he scrambled up the hill. He's kind of working with one leg and two arms at this point. And he stopped the very first truck that went by on the road. And the truck, he looked a little rough, even though he'd been combing his hair every day. He was not looking great. So the driver of the truck was pretty suspicious. He didn't believe the story. He kind of was initially not necessarily willing to help him. But then he walked to the edge of the road, looked down and saw the car. And he realized, well, this is for real. The story is true. So he ran back to John and offered him his lunch and offered him a ride and went into rescue mode, got him to a nearby ranger station pretty quickly. where he was able to call his family. And of course, his family had been coordinating a search for him for the last probably 15 days when he didn't come home as they expected. So some people had given up hope, and many people were so thrilled to hear his voice.
Thank goodness for that Good Samaritan, because you hear stories all the time of people getting overlooked that are coming out of these type of situations because they look so haggard.
Yeah. So pretty quickly, he was transported to a hospital in Portland, and he did end up having his leg amputated maybe a week later. It was amputated below his mid-shin, so he lost the lower part of his lower leg and his foot. And he, in one article I read where he was interviewed, he talked about how the whole time he was in the hospital recovering, he couldn't sleep well because he was just terrified that the rescue and being in the hospital was all a dream, and that he was going to wake up at any moment and realize that he was still in the vehicle and this was just some delusion that he was having.
That's terrible. Did that go on even after he got home?
I think it eventually got better. He lived a pretty remarkable life. It kind of bounced back, not immediately, but after years of adjusting to his new body, because remember, I told you he's pretty physically active, outdoorsman, used to doing a lot of physical things. He got back into all that. He mountain biked. He was into skiing. At one point, he was the president of Utah's Handicapped Skiers Association. He had athletic sponsorship opportunities, did triathlons, biathlons.
Wow.
Yeah, eventually ran a marathon. So really impressive, yeah, like post-ordeal outdoor resume.
That's amazing. I love hearing stuff like that, because you always hear the people that are like middle-aged that say, oh, I can't ski anymore because XYZ, whatever. I mean, you know, fill in the blank. It's the same thing with any physical activity. People are always like, I'm too old for that. Like, are you
right?
Are you sure?
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he went on to work for the National Institutes of Health, and kind of a well-documented career, and lived out a pretty exciting and rewarding life after this ordeal. And in a couple of the interviews I read where he talked about how it was pretty life-changing for him. But as we've heard in other survival stories, it can really create a priority shift. And I think that was something that he experienced as well.
That's really interesting. It put all of his training that he'd had in his life and all of his past experiences really to the test. And I find that really interesting. The book that I'm reading that I told you about, The Survivors Club, which you got to read. Everybody's got to read it. Really good. But it was talking about how there's a percentage of people who should have made it that didn't make it in these survival situations. And a lot of times they either, number one, don't do anything because it's so foreign to them, the situation they're in, they can't get past the fact that they don't have any prior experiences to help them out of it, or they just don't try hard enough. They just give up too soon. They don't realize their full potential, what they're actually capable of, or they don't even try, right?
And right.
John, he used every resource that he had at his disposal. I was curious about what would have been the situation had he been belted in. Would he have survived?
Yeah. Who knows?
Like,
that's a good question.
This could be one of those situations where people that don't like to wear their seatbelts are like, see, people survive not wearing their seatbelts. But
right.
I'm just curious about that. He could have had a lot of other injuries with that car crash, too. You know, the fact that
right.
he just had that foot injury, he could have
had a punctured lung.
Right. I mean, you would think, okay, you could have had a major concussion, multiple other fractures, just being
so many things.
Yeah. Free floating body in the vehicle falling down that far.
Yeah.
And also,
yeah, pretty remarkable.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is that it could have crushed his car to a point where he wasn't able to open the doors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or to the point that it crushed him, too.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you want to say he was lucky, but that's up for debate, I would feel.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. But I think like that attitude of doing, like, I'm going to try something. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to try something else. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to try something else. And just even if the ideas seem silly, the act of doing engages your mind, keeps you moving in a forward direction, can help limit these thoughts that I'm sure come into survivors' minds of doom and gloom.
Well, yeah, I think it's emotional regulation. And you could say that for any, even the day-to-day circumstances that we're going through when you start feeling overwhelmed, is just to focus on an action that you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you're doing something, you're less likely to be feeling that panic as opposed to if you're just sitting around ruminating.
Yeah. you're thinking about what you're doing, not thinking about all the bad things that are going to come your way. Works yep. in life, too.
Words to live by, Julie.
Words to live by.
Prior proper planning. It was making me think, okay, what are the things that are in your vehicle and how accessible are they? Right? Like, I had a family friend who was driving a white vehicle in the winter in the snow, and something similar happened, and the car ended up upside down. And she had a cell phone, but it ended up flying because her car got flipped. And then she thankfully was able to unbuckle her seatbelt and get her phone. But she was in a position where no one would have seen her vehicle. Mm-hmm. And because it was mm-hmm. white and it was in the ditch in the snow, you know, it wasn't visible. So just something to be thinking about. I've considered that when I'm driving it. Anytime, just where is my cell phone? Is it somewhere where I could access it if I needed a call for help? You know, those mm-hmm. kind of things that probably we're not generally thinking about.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in the winter in Montana, keeping some stuff in your vehicle, sleeping bag or whatever it might be.
Right. And maybe the snacks should be in the glove compartment or in the center mm-hmm. console or something, as opposed, because I'm always thinking about keeping this stuff in the far end of my vehicle. But if you're trapped yeah. in the driver's seat, it's not going to do you any good if it's in the trunk or if it's in the back of your SUV.
The problem is if it's in the console or the glove box, your kids are going to eat them long before you eat them.
That's true. Unless you just put cat food in there, Julie.
Just put a couple cans of cat food in your center console.
No one's going to eat the cat food. It. It's perfect.
Exactly. And you got to have a can opener, too.
Yeah. Well, then that therein lies another problem. I mean, how are you going to open the cat food when you're stuck in your vehicle? You just have a can opener in there just for emergency situations?
Yeah, just keep a can opener duct taped to the can. Then you have the duct tape, too.
I am prepared. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, that was fun.
It was fun. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that story with us.
Thanks for joining us for another survival story today. We'd like to ask for your support in spreading the word about the Crux True Survival Stories. If you enjoyed today's episode or any other episode that we've shared, please take a moment to visit our Instagram page at The Crux Podcast. And we encourage you to share our latest posts on your stories. Help us reach more fellow survival enthusiasts and storytellers. If you haven't already, please consider leaving a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. We'd love to hear from you. Your feedback means the world to us, and it helps us continue bringing you compelling stories of survival. If you have any story you'd like to share with us, or just topics you want to explore, feel free to write us at thecruxsurvival@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Yes, we would love to hear from you. Hope you have a wonderful week, and stay safe out there, everybody. Wear sunblock, drink lots of water, etc.
Put cat food in your center console.
Exactly. Yes, all of those things. All right, well, have a good one.
Bye, Casey.
Bye.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off Duration products and SuperDeck stains from August 23rd through the 26th. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your bedroom, living room, or home office, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.